The sponsor of our show today is CNE Wildlife. CNE Wildlife partnered up with North American Deer Talk. We're incredibly grateful for that. If you get a chance or an opportunity, say thank you to them. And the reason is really simple. They have 30 years of commitment to all natural probiotics. This commitment's really a passion for them. And they've established that through university research at Texas Tech. Whether that be their Fawn Paste, their Top Score product, their Show Choice, Farm Pack, all the various products they have, they really provide a service and a set of products that helps your herd thrive. Give Sadie a call over there at CNE and order up some good stuff. We think you'll like it. We know we do. We've been product users for almost 15 years now. We feel it's the best around. So get you some CNE Wildlife today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of North American Deer Talk. Today, it is May 3rd, 2022. I have Sean Schaefer, Executive Director of the North American Deer Farmers Association on the show today. Sean, how are you?
Really good. Thank you, Josh. Appreciate you having me on.
Sure. So as I do with previous guests, I just always check and see when I had you on last. Any guesses?
I think it's been over a year, buddy.
It has. So March 24th, 2021, we had our last Nadifa show. So right over a year.
We were due. And I'll tell you, Josh, you're probably my biggest critic for poor communication. The whole world out there, as with any person with a problem, you need to admit your faults, admit you have a problem to fix them. I still haven't sent out, and we're going to be talking about it today. That's what's kind of led into this, but I still haven't sent out my little clips or snippets from our DC conference, our DC fly-in last week. And, I never made any live videos while we were there. And that was a big thing you pushed me at, I'm trying to think 2-3 years ago there when you come out to
2019,
DC. 4 years ago already,
2019, yeah.
COVID in our 2 years. Yep. I kind of like making them live videos. My struggle, though, is just like today, to be able to just sit down here and find that time. And people can say, it only takes a few minutes, and it does. It only takes that few minutes. But, I do like to edit out a thing here or there or whatever. And I try to do that, like that downtime sitting in the airports. And you know what? At this day and age, I don't know what it is, but I don't have downtime in airports. I'm running from one flight, one plane to the next. And when you're up in air, you don't get nothing done. And turn off your phone, whatever. So I appreciate you giving me the time and reaching out here and doing this for hopefully the industry to sit and watch and enjoy. So
absolutely. I and for those that are listening on the podcast, if you want to see Sean and my made for radio faces, you can check out our YouTube channel over at North American Deer Talk. So just punch in North American Deer Talk into the YouTube search bar. Make sure you subscribe over there and check it out. It is important. And to your point, I try to do, a short little video or a soundbite here and there, or some kind of social media post, as we have many members, at least in our state of Pennsylvania and nationally with Nadifa, that can just kind of catch up on some quick news, right? It's just like, hey, here's what I'm doing. Like, here's what we're doing for you. And that's, it's important, and it's a way to engage people. I know I get feedback all the time. I suspect you get it more than I do. Hey, Josh, what are you doing for the folks in Pennsylvania? Hey, Sean, what are you doing for us? Count XYZ states, right? It's kind of that quick way to say, hey, I am doing something. If I spent all the time telling you the things I was doing, I wouldn't get any of those things kind of done. And it's I tell my wife this story, and then we'll get into the show. I promise. I'll walk in from a day, and she'll be like, what'd you do today? And I'm like, it just wasn't a good day. Well, what'd you do? And I'm like, I just don't want to go through it again. Right. And so you have some of those days, especially in the severe that we're working in, however you want to look at it, our job, and more specifically your job, is a political one. And that's the sandbox we must play in. And it's hard. It's mentally taxing. It's frustrating. But like, if we want to make progress on these things, we have to play in that sandbox, and you got to play a certain way. So I can respect, you know, the fact that if you haven't done a video in a while, it's okay. And my criticisms to you are always in a constructive nature and a friendly one. So,
well, for sure. And I appreciate them. Like you said, I think they need to happen. I need to get more on them again here. We say this is kind of our slow time now coming in the spring, is it actually speeds up on the farm, but the industry actually, you know, has a little bit. You know, with that said, I'm flying to West Virginia here in a week to work, do some stuff there with their program. But, you know, it does seem like it is kind of getting into more of a little slower time for another month or so within the industry. So hopefully I can get back in the habit of getting back out there in front of the people.
You know? Sure. So I wanted to chat with you mostly for selfish reasons, as I do with most of the guests that I have on. It's just because I like to stay engaged, and I'm curious about the things that are going on. So I want to touch on the convention, because I know NDFA had their annual convention. This was our first time being back in person in a couple years. And, you know, if you could just touch on the, you know, like when the convention was and kind of some of the highlights of the show and why you have that. And then we'll transition into some other, a little more sensitive topics.
Okay. As you said, you know, it was the first one in 2 years. So, you know, starting COVID stuff, we had two, I don't know what you call them. They weren't even really a hybrid. They were just purely virtual. The last two conferences, it turned into just virtual fundraisers. Last year we did have a virtual new deer farmer seminar tied with it. We did have a little bit of an education component to it there. So helpful. I'm grateful that we got that done. But this year we're back to French Lick, Indiana, and we're going to be back to French Lick, Indiana again next year. Part of the reason for that back-to-back is, you know, this, the big unknown of, were we ever going to have a conference again? When were we going to ever have it? Where, you know, so we try to plan at least 3 years in advance so we can give warning to people, tell them where we're going. You know, they can start their planning, get our dates set. Part of it also, to any of these larger venues like that, they book out 3 to 5 years in advance. So if you want to get a specific weekend, you need to be booked. Hard to book when you don't know where you're going to be or if you're going to be able to have it in person. So we, instead of reinventing the wheel, we just kept kind of kicking that can, or just keeping that wheel, I guess. We stayed French Lick. That's where we were supposed to be, and the one that was canceled, we canceled that one and signed the next contract. And the next one, we just kept pushing it out. So we're going to do two back-to-back. I'm looking for feedback from those that attend and those that don't attend. Is there other places you suggest, other places you'd like to see us go? We're always open to, you know, to ideas. So if you have a solution or have an idea or a suggestion, boy, reach out to me. I'd be the best bet. Is just tell me personally. If that don't work for you, you know, one of the board of directors, you know, reach out to any of them, or heck, call Marcy at the office. But we're always looking for ideas. So do I think French Lick is the best place in the world? No, absolutely not. You know, I think it'd be nice if it was closer to the airport. At the same time, for years, we avoided any place that wasn't close to an airport. But several years back, after one of the conferences, and I was sitting waiting in the airport, I was kind of just doing a mental note, looking at the people that were there and who flew in, who didn't. And it's a small number or percentage of the actual conference attendees fly in. Now, the ones that do, you know, thank you for coming. But same time, we have, you know, 80% of the people that drive there. You know, it's in a big portion of them are pulling a trailer for the booths, you know, and now driving downtown Dallas, downtown Birmingham, pulling a trailer, dragging a trailer, trying to find parking, you know. So I'm trying to make life easier for the guy that flies in and might have to get a rental car or get an Uber, or this day and age with the Uber, it's actually tough to even have to use that excuse, because that's pretty simple. But anyhow, it was a bummer renting a car to sit there for 4 days that you're using. But Uber, they can come get you, take you back. It's pretty easy. There's a shuttle bus too, whatever. So I still would like to find a place closer to an airport. But I still like the idea of being out in the country like we are, having big open parking, having no traffic, centrally located. If you draw a circle around the industry, I don't know, name all the deer farming states that you know, or the top deer farming, the larger deer farming, whatever, the smallest deer farming states, draw a circle around them one time. You know what? French Lick and Indiana is pretty central for all of them. So, you know, that's an thing too. We used to bounce it all around. We went to the extremes, you know, went to Florida, then we went to Pennsylvania, and went to Texas, and, you know, we went all over. I think we were in Arizona years ago. But so that's the challenge we have with booking. But we are booked for next year already, French Lick, Indiana, but looking for suggestions for 2024. Conference-wise, you know, the industry, and I know with CWD issues, regulations, everything, things were – we're slowing down a tish, you know, and if you go to these big sales, you know, the number of booths at these sales were declining. The number of booths at NADIFA was declining. I remember when we had like 140 some booths one year, I think it was the best ever. But we were declining and we were struggling. I think the last in-person event in Tulsa, I thought we had like 80-ish, you know. Attendance was starting to back off a little bit, you know, and but I can tell you this one here, we had just under 100 booths, and I think we would have hit 100, but I tell you, life happens, you know, and we had deaths in the family, we had medical issues, I mean, you name it. I felt every time the phone would ring, I was like, oh my God, what happened to someone again? I mean, you know these people personally, I mean, it hurt. So there would have easily been, you know, 100 booths booked and sold is what we had, but it was just a little under that. So what a tremendous show as far as that went. Attendance wise, was it a record? No, it wasn't a record numbers by any means, but it was still great. It was better than the Tulsa show. So we are increasing. Well, I think we're back up. I'd say we're maybe leveled off, you know, and so attendance was great. The booths were great. We kind of backed off on the number of speakers. You know, when I first took this over, you know, we had a lot of concurrent sessions. We had a lot of different, people were running different directions. And you'd have two speakers at one time that you kind of wanted to listen to. You always had to get your spouse or your business partner, whoever, someone else sitting the other one. And I was always trying to get away from that. Let's get more networking time, more trade show time, and yet still have quality speakers. I think we accomplished that this year. You know, two of the hot issues we always hear about, EHD, epizootic hemorrhagic disease. We had the latest on the vaccine for it from Medgene Labs, working very well. Proven titers, you know, going through a conditionally licensed process with the Center for Veterinary Biologics. I mean, it's the real deal. So very good information there on the CWD, the chronic wasting side. You know, we hear a lot around this country about what we need to do to improve this industry, to fix, you know, things, to fight the regulations, the overregulation. The true fix is fixing CWD, you know, chronic wasting disease. And I believe, and I look at like the scrapie industry and the sheep industry is scrapie, just the breeding that fixed that, you know, moving away from it. And I've had some the other day tell me, well, so we eradicated scrapie in this country? No, we still have scrapie. Does anyone really care? Not really, you know? You deal with it. You manage it. You find it. You work through it. That's where we need to get with the chronic wasting disease. Now, and maybe that's a lead with a segue into something that, you know, just kind of popped in my head as we're going. You know, there was a big move here a few weeks back on Facebook. All over Facebook, people were forwarding this, you know, this discussion from a guy in Texas on a biologist talking about CWD is just no more than scrapie. And I had a lot of calls on that. So Miss Josh, I hope you don't mind I'm gonna drop this in here, but I just need to quickly say, yeah, it's a TSC. It's a transmissible spongiform encephalopathy. Yes, they all are. BSE, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, you know, Kuru, feline encephalopathy, mink encephalopathy. Correct, it is. But honestly, the chicken or the egg part of this doesn't really matter. Which one came first? It doesn't really matter. What matters, you know, even if it, no matter how the scrapey tie is, we still have to do something about it. Because if you're a sheep rancher and you have scrapey, they're going to still come in and do something about it. You just don't drag them off the rock pile and that's that. You know, you still have to do something about it. So, but the neat thing, back to the genetics, you can do something about it. And, you know, back to the Facebook post again and the social media stuff, you know, is it the breeding values or is it the genetic markers, the genomic markers? Which one is it? Which was the best one? Which works, which doesn't work? It's a combination of both. And I'll tell you, I know both researchers, both camps, both, there is no two separate camps. There's one camp. It's a solution for CWD. And we had Dr. Justin Greenlee and Eric Kastman from Ames, Iowa, USDA's ARS, the Agriculture Research Services. And they gave some great presentations on the work they're doing there and the research they're doing in Ames, Iowa, with the genomic markers, looking at the KKs, the HHs, the SSs. You know, and I get beat up on this a lot too. People are like, well, what's happening? Why aren't they telling us? They're not putting the information on. You got to remember, I think we're in our second year into it. They just did, right before the conference, they collected the samples from, you know, that the second year mark. And, you know, it took a full year for the animals that they had challenged to become infected. And then we're waiting for those animals to infect the other animals. Because we're, in my mind, I hate intracranial. I hate injecting anything. I hate infecting anything because that's not natural. You know, we can give anything to anything that we want. We can give diseases to everything. So I want to see them animals get it. And even this truly is a natural. They're inside a research center, but it's as natural as we can get probably. We're in that year mark from them getting exposed from the natural one. So now we got to give that time. And ideally, they'll never get it, or they'll take 8 years or 10 years to get it, whatever. But it's going to take a while. That's what the whole, I guess, you know, there's not a fast solution to this, you know, unless you want to get into the mouse models, which I don't like mouse models either. But anyhow, they gave some really good information and you know, an update on their research. Watch for it in the next coming up here in the upcoming NADIFA magazines. We'll have some articles on it. Tough for me to get in here and explain everything they said. Get with the people that were there, you know. I guess it's a good reason to come to the conference. You hear it firsthand. And then after they spoke, Dr. Chris Seabury, Texas A&M, spoke about these genetic breeding values. Answered a lot of the questions. You know, there's a lot of questions. There's animals that are past the cutoff value that still become positive. Yeah, I mean, it's going to happen. It's like these sheep that still get scrapey. But hopefully it's going to be a lot less. You know, we know it's going to be a lot less than a whole herd getting it now. It's a lot of its dose dependency. We don't know those animals, you know, what, how big of whack did they get, you know, what was it, how long ago was it? How long have they been incubating? There's a lot of them unknown. So we're learning on that. Like I said, he gave a good update on that, good explanations, all that. I think the take home message to both of them is you need to start now, you know, it's kind of like planting a tree. You know, the best time to plant a tree was, you know, yesterday or 10 years ago or whatever it isn't tomorrow or next week. You know, so we need to get started, because doing nothing doesn't work. That doing nothing is not a solution, you know, and we have monitored programs, but it's a monitor. You're hopefully going to find it and catch it when you have it early enough that we can do something about it, but it doesn't truly prevent you from getting it, you know. And so with that said, I'd like to give a quick plug, as I seen there's messages too. I keep going to Facebook. I mean, that's the information source we're all using, but yeah, the testing tubes, that the tissue sample collection tubes, I think they're called TSUs, tissue sample units. People are trying to order them from Valley Vet or order them straight from Ytex, or not Ytex, Allflex, excuse me, from Allflex. Hey, Ytex and Allflex, neither of them are sponsors, so we can switch them up all we want. But Ytex or Allflex, you know, some of these guys are getting a message like they're 8 to 12 weeks out. And that might be because I think they have commitments to their customers to provide them. But if you order them right from Neogen, if you go on the NADAR website, North American Deer Registry website, and put a tissue or sample tube, get that little link, sample button there. Anyway, it'll take you to a link. They'll take you right to Neogen, or just punch up Neogen, N-E-O-G-E-N. and it'll take you to their site and go to those TSUs and you can order them. I got mine in 3 days. I ordered 100 of them and 3 days later, they were at my doorstep, you know? So pretty slick, cost $2.50 a piece. NADAR will reimburse you $3 when you use them. People don't understand. I know the other day, someone said, well, I just do horn core. Or I just do hair samples. Been doing them hair samples for 20 some years, 30 years, it works, you know? Well, I don't think they understand. I think people think you open up that envelope, you shake all the hair out into the machine and it grinds it up and gets you the DNA. No. Some person sits down with this huge magnifying glass that they're looking through and they take the hairs out of that envelope carefully, hoping that everybody pulled them in their, in kind of order, and they lay them out on a slide and they got to line up all the roots and they got to put a piece of tape across it so it don't move, you know, and then they submit that and then they got to do it again with the next envelope and hope like heck there's not a piece of hair stuck to their finger, you know, or stuck on that bag in a magnifying glass. It's a mess. Who's ever worked with hair, you know? Those sample tubes punch that tissue right out, right into the alcohol. It's preserved and it lasts. If you don't want to send them in right away and you're worried sometimes like a piece of hair gets stuck in that little ball and then the alcohol evaporates out, people get nervous about if it's any good or not, you can throw those little alcohol tubes into your freezer. And they will last for years and years and years because now not only is it an alcohol, but it's stored inside the freezer. So just something to think about with that. If you don't want to, you know, you want to wait to see what, you know, when you wean them, what fawn survived, which ones didn't, just submit the ones that live. You can wait and submit them in the fall, but I really suggest everybody order those tubes now. And they work. That's neat to put a pre-punched hole into the ear to put the ear tag through later on. I mean, stuff like that. There's a lot of benefits to using it. So, and I know that ain't what the show is about, Josh, but I just want to quick throw that in there.
No,
tubes that make life easier and faster for your turnaround times and getting your samples back.
Yeah. And I think on that point, it's important to know. And I recall I was fortunate to be at Nadifa and listen to both the Greenlee and Kassaman and Seabury talks. And Dr. Seabury talked about a call rate on samples. And what that was is it was basically inferring to the quality of the DNA that you were getting. Helps with the test. And, you know, there's probably not a better form of DNA that we can provide on at scale cheaply than using these TSU sample units. And heck, NADAR has gone as far as to incentivize you by reimbursing you the cost of those. It's really twofold. And you touched on the one with the person sitting down and you know, placing those hair and follicles on that slide. You ever worked here in the winter and you're all staticked up and trying to get that hair? I mean, could you imagine sitting at a table placing all those hair follicles? Anyway, so those tubes, they're automated for robots.
Yeah, they got a barcode and what's that little?
Yeah. So they have robotics that set all those up and they can process those through. We have to remember that. And I guess we'll just do the whole thing. You know, NADAR talked about some of their lead times and people, you know, hey, when am I going to get my samples? So on and so forth. Well, parentage is coming back in 3 weeks. That's pretty consistent. Maybe they have, depending on your quality of sample, maybe they have an issue and it takes four. Right. And we know that the CWD test, the PRNP gene, and also the GPS testing, that takes longer. And it's because it's going to a different lab, that the lab that performs the testing is not NADAR's lab, right? NADAR's the facilitator. That lab is doing 25,000 samples a day for other animal industries. They're the largest DNA lab in the world. They are the best DNA lab in the world by far. So, you know, we as an industry are a very small piece of that business model. We're fortunate that we're able to use that lab and that technology. So you just, you know, be patient, but plan ahead, right? Use those TSU tubes. It'll make everything far more efficient.
And I know this ain't a NADAR commercial here, but NADIF is one of the parent companies along with TDA and Vedadas to Mexico of NADAR. So I'll give a little defense here too. You know, people have said, well, why don't we switch labs? You know, there are not many. There aren't many other options for labs that can do that SNP technology. And the ones that are, you know, we have looked at, turnaround times aren't any better. Price is terrible. That's what we're getting here is the volume discount, basically, because of the amount of work they do. So, you know, the price is really terrible when you go somewhere else. So, you know, it's kind of a twofold thing as we're trying to get most accurate test we can and for the best price that we can. So I think as you said, plan ahead a little bit. Don't wait till the week before the sale to be sending in your samples. You know,
we're all guilty, aren't we?
Yeah, you're dang right I am. I just got mine submitted. But with that also, I hate to say it again. I think we've mentioned COVID 5 times right here on this, but you know, I mentioned my flight problems and running from airport, everything, all the different canceled flights. There's still a workforce shortage in this country. People just don't want to go back to work. Mm-hmm. Next gen, Neogen there is, having their issues too with the, turnover of staff, staff.
Not next gen, definitely Neogen. Yeah. Not next gen.
Neogen. Yeah. Neogen. Neogen. Thank you. Thank you. Neogen. Hey, if you want to, Neogen. So they've having their issues too with their with work staff. So hopefully we get through that as things, and this is a whole nother new test thing. So it's going to get better. That's my commitment to you is it will get better. I promise. If you're having issues, hey, don't be afraid to call me and I can call and do some looking into it too. If you're having problems, let's get down to it.
Sure. Go ahead. Circling back to the conference.
So we had a heck of an antler competition.
Mm.
The one thing we did, and I don't know, I'm still having nightmares wondering if we should have done or not, but we went back, we offered 3 separate years of antler competition because of the 2 canceled conferences. And we said, hey, it's not fair to those deer or fair to the farms that grew monster deer in 2019 or 2020. They have to compete against, this year. So not that they're competing or they're different, but let's say, Josh grew a monster 2-year-old in 2020 and grew another monster 2-year-old in 2022. Well, instead of having a first and a second, now you could have a first and a first, and let the deer compete against the deer of that year. So we had 3 separate contests, and I'll tell you, we are still kind of working through that. We're finding some issues. So yeah, you might get called up and we might get, this 22 conference was for last year's deer, the 21 deer. And then the year, we probably needed to clarify that better. And also we were working from our Safari Club International. They work separate from NADIFA. They do the contest. And they had all new staff. They've had a big turnover. And we had our issues and challenges within them, So not everybody recorded the deer into the right proper year, let's say that. So we're still working through some of those bugs and get the right plaques out to people. And hopefully we'll have that all corrected when the magazine comes out. And we're still working on that. But either way, it was neat to see those tables, rows of all those antlers. It had a lot of antlers, 3 years worth there. That was fun. It's nice to see what this industry grows and produces. It's what it's about in my mind is those antlers.
I really like the antler competition generally. The fun part for me, I always try to submit like at least one set of antlers just to get them scored up. Right. And that's for me, I just want someone unbiased outside of myself or, a buddy, scoring those antlers. So I have that, hey, this was officially scored at NADIFA kind of certificate. Right. And, while you're back there dropping your antlers off, it's always cool to like walk around and see what's what. And then of course, the culmination of that is the award ceremony, in the morning on the last day and, kind of standing there and seeing, who did what and you know, getting those awards. I've been fortunate to get a couple awards over the years, and it makes you feel good, right? Because you're competing against everybody else that's there, and it provides some recognition for your form. I'd be remiss if I didn't say that John Irvin has the most insane amount of awards that I've ever seen. And if you haven't been to a deer show to see his booth, I always give him a hard time. It was a couple years ago. I said, John, how many awards you got there? And he was like 72. And I was like, oh my goodness. And of course he won like 20 more this past year. So
he brings a lot of antlers, you know, but
he does.
Everybody he gets can a do lot that. Of deer bring testing. Your antlers. If you got good antlers, bring them. You know?
You bet.
So there are a lot of guys, well, I got bigger ones than that at home. Do you?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like
bring them. Yeah.
I love looking at antler. Of course, everybody else does too. And, yeah, it's important. Like bring your antlers, get them scored. They are what they are, right? Like right. Let other people see them. Nothing. Right. You find some gems. I found a couple gems on that table back there that I did not know about. So
right.
Anyway, come to the Nadifa conference, put some antlers in the competition. I want to see them.
Kind of doing this backwards. We're ending with what we talked with the antler competition. but let's go to the beginning of this conference. We started with a new deer farmer seminar. Mm. And I think right about 50. So 50 new deer farmers, that's not bad. Very good speakers, a full day of just a lot of the basic information, you know, and just trying to help people get off on that right foot, you know. So hopefully we put people in touch with the right, you know, industry leaders and vendors, you know, to help them out. So something to think about next year. I mean, if you're new to this industry, you've been in this industry a year, 2 years, 3 years. If you've never been to that new deer farmer seminar, hey, welcome. Please come. You know, I mean, it's a lot of good information there too.
So. Yeah, I you know, I've participated in that, not only from a listener's standpoint or a participant standpoint, but also as a presenter on a couple different topics. And I think it's an advanced class, right? Like, yeah, there's a lot of basics, but like if you're paying attention there while you're listening, like there is a ton of really great info. And if you go in there, you'll see guys in there that have 20, 25 years of experience listening away. Right. And there's a reason.
Yeah. So people, I've had some members upset. Why are we doing it on Wednesday? Why do it the day before? You know, the conference is already so long. Now you got to come an extra day. And, you know, and why does it cost $50 to come to that? You already paid your registration fee. And, well, it's twofold. You know, number one, we don't want that new deer farmer to spend an entire day, Thursday or Friday, sitting in class and missing the conference, missing all the other speakers and being able to interact and network with the other breeders around the country. So we do it ahead of time so they can do that. We also do it ahead of time to keep the old deer farmer out. If you want to come, come, but you're going to come a day early, you're going to pay $50. Because we did have issues years ago where some guy that, you know, trying to belittle someone else that asked a silly question or a new question, something that, you know, he'd never experienced it before. So it made sense to him to ask it, where the guy that's been doing it for 20 years, well, that's just silly, you know? And so anyway, we eliminated that so that, you know, these people aren't, the new deer farmer's not afraid to speak up or afraid to ask questions, not intimidated, you know? But ideally, you know, truthfully, on the $50, though, it isn't to keep the old deer farmer out. It's to help pay for your meals and the breakfast for that day is what it really is, because you are getting an extra day. But I would
encourage you got to rent the room, the AV equipment. You got to get the people there. Like there's cost to anything, and $50 is pretty cheap. So
yeah. I want to thank our sponsors. New Dart has been one of the major sponsors of the new deer farmer seminar, I think every year we've ever had it. So thanks to New Dart and Barosaurus for that. Conference wise, fundraiser, very successful. I don't know that there truly was a deal to be had. Everything brought good prices all the way through. And, you know, if I look back, and I really pushed this last year, I attended every event I could. There was one event that I just absolutely could not get to. And then after the conference, now we've had two. I haven't made it to Florida or Louisiana. I apologize to those two guys. But, you know, I was there last year. I can't do them both every year, but going into every event, all the fundraisers I was at, all the sales I was at, well, I tell you, we had a heck of a year. This industry was thriving. I mean, it was rocking and rolling, and Nadifa, I think, kind of finishes, you know, kind of ends the year. I don't think it starts the year. I think it ends the year. That Nadifa open sale was phenomenal. We had a, you know, we've had some soft Nadifa open sales in the past, and we debated about even having them. We made it a little bit smaller, changed up the venue, held it during the event Friday. And geez, there was great sales in that Nadifa open all the way through. So what a great way to finish the year. And I'm looking forward to 2022 leading into this next fawning season. The antler growth right now, I think to me now is the start of the next cycle. And I'm glad that we were able to end last year's cycle. And I think we ended on a really strong, positive note. I really do. So,
yeah, I thought the overall the convention was really good. I had a really good time. I know the other people that I just chatted with throughout the weekend or weekend all enjoyed themselves. And, you know, hats off to Nadifa for you guys putting that on. And it's a necessary thing, right? Because you have to come figure out how to fund Nadifa's operations, right? And the fundraiser is a big part of that. The convention's a big part of that. At the same time, it's a social event, right? So you have this really great component where you get to see old friends, you get to meet new friends, and you get to raise some money for something that we all have common interest in. And it's really important. And I know that, you know, again, we come back to the feedback, you know, I know again that I've faced on a state level, hey, what are you doing for us? And again, I know you have on a national level. And, you know, I'm pretty fortunate because I have exposure to other industries, livestock industries, specifically cattle. And I look at their conventions and some of the shows that they do, and like obviously they're different industries and they're different in size and scope, but they raise a bunch of money because their livelihoods depend on it. Or if their livelihoods don't depend on it, it's a passion or a hobby that they are really, really, really into, right? And if you want to continue to be able to raise deer in the United States, and when I say deer, I mean elk and red deer and fallow and all that, you really need to take a hard look at where you spend your dollars and how you support various state and national agencies. And I know this sounds like a commercial for Nadifa or PDFA. It kind of is, right? Because like I know the work that I do behind the scenes nearly every day. And I continue to get exposure to the work you do on a regular basis. And like, it's like there's not a lot of people out there that are doing these things state and national level. And we are guilty, not like we as deer farmers are guilty because, you know, like not all of us put our money where our mouths are, and everybody has a different, you know, economic status that they have to play in. But I promise you that, you know, at a minimum, your dues, whether they be 50 or 75 or 100 or 150 bucks, that's just the entrance to get in the door. That additional support goes a huge long way. And again, these conferences and fundraisers are really important. So if you can, just try to participate in those in any way. Like, hey, if you got 25 bucks and that's all you can afford to give, like, thank you, right? Like, thank you very much. We appreciate it. And if you got 2,500 or 25,000, again, thank you. Like, it all goes to a really good place, right? And Sean and I are going to, we're going to transition out of the conference after Sean's closing thoughts, which are going to be less than a minute because I don't want to harp on the conference too much longer.
And I'm getting off the conference, but I want to mention the membership part of this. I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, I tell everybody, if you can only be a member of one thing, you should be a member of your state association, because all the state associations, you know, do work with Nadifa. We work hand in hand. So, for sure, without a doubt, you need to be a member of your state association. So please, everybody, you know, make darn sure that you are a member. It's embarrassing. And it isn't just us. You mentioned the cattle guys. I know cattle guys, horse guys. It's 15, 20% of the industry, you know, that's supporting everybody else that's doing nothing. So, you know, why is it that we don't have 100% of the deer breeders, you know, and I say deer loosely like you do too, because they're all the deer family, elk, fallow, sika, axis, whitetails, mule deer. Why are you not a member of your state association if you're not? Hopefully, if you are, great. And then the National Association, North American Deer Farmers, you know, I mean, you really, truly should be both, you know, and then, and, you know, at least for darn sure, if you can't make it to the conference, at least make sure you're paying your membership. That's the number one place to start for everything. So here we are, we got a whole year before next year's conferences. So get your dues paid, please. Just if everybody paid their dues, if everybody did a little, no one would have to do a lot. So yeah, I just wanted to end on that part is, yes, your membership is so important. It's, you just don't understand.
You know? It is. And for all those that are members, thank you. Thank you.
Rank the numbers.
Yep. Okay. So we're going to shift gears from convention to the political sandbox. Recently, last week, you had a DC trip. I was also invited to participate in that, and we had some really good meetings. Do you want to just touch on the importance of the DC trip, and then we'll get into some of the specifics?
Yeah, I can definitely do that. You know, it's something that you know, we've been doing for many years now. My gosh, I'm thinking over 18 years I've been going out there, 19 years, something like that. It's been a long time, longer than that already. Anyway, this was a hybrid. You know, I mentioned earlier about a hybrid conference. This was truly a hybrid fly-in. Last year we did a fly-in. The year before it was canceled. And what we did then is, you know, because of the first year of COVID, myself along with our president and worked with Capital Consulting, our lobbyist group out there. And everything was basically phone calls and emails, you know, but we were able to maintain what we've had and didn't lose anything through the event, you know, through that process. But then last year I think we had 30 some different, maybe even 40 some, 45 different meetings all by Zoom, you know, and with that, we were able to increase our appropriations, our budget just a little bit, you know, and grew it some more. This year now, a lot of DC is still tough to travel, tough to get, you know, and it's COVID, a little COVID related, but, you know, some of it goes back to that January 6th thing where they stormed the Capitol, you know, and that has made it a pain to get in and out of. You can't believe if you've never done it, you know, and it's sad that you missed it in the, you know, because how accessible our public servants are, our congressmen, our Washington, D.C., our government, our U.S. government, it was amazing. You get it, you know, and they say that, you know, a lot of other countries that come over here and then they, as they work within, they can't believe how you can just, you can walk up and down the halls of our capitals, of our Congress, you know, and well, them days are over. You can't just walk, you know, and you can a little bit once you get in, but getting in is a lot harder. So to bring 30 people from, you know, 15 different states and to meet with 60 different offices. Whoa. I mean, it's not happening right now in this day and age. So what we did is the week previous, we scheduled a lot of meetings with different state industry leaders. Part of it too, historically, and we've just opened it up. If you want to go to Washington, DC, you want to represent your state, come on out, please. You know, and we will find you the meetings. We will set you up with your representatives, with your two senators. And sometimes you don't ever get in with the actual congressman and the member themselves, but you'll meet with their staff, with the head. And honestly, it's this whole country's being ran by a bunch of 20, 22-year-olds anyway. But anyway, you know, we try to get in many actual member meetings you can, but most of them, you know, probably a good share will be with staff, at least people that are truly going to get our requests taken care of. But this year we focused on, you know, our lobbyists looked at who is the, you know, on the right key committees, you know, appropriations, agriculture, you know, natural resources. Those are the people that truly are voting our industry, you know, controlling our industry. So We focused on them and we went out and targeted the states. Hey, we went to each of them states, said, who do you have? We went to their state associations. We need your leaders within your state associations to get on a call, get on a Zoom meeting, you know, and we set up Zoom meetings for those people to discuss our issues. And from there, then after that, a week of that, we set up meetings in person, face-to-face meetings with the actual chairman of the committees, you know, the senior staff or the senior congressman on those committees. And that's where Josh came in here, you know, Glenn Thompson from, you know, Pennsylvania, you know, going to be moving up to the number one seat in agriculture. Anyhow, and he introduced one of our bills that we introduced on the Senate, but on the House side, this Chronic Wasting Disease Management and Research Act, passed the House and back in December. So with that said, Glenn Dice, Josh Newton, myself, President of the DFA, Jacques Damas, flew out to Washington, D.C. last week, but with our met up with our lobbyist, and we did 3 days of just meetings all throughout the Hill there in both the Senate and the House side. And I guess they're probably rolling into some of our ask, I guess, if you don't know the process. Within to run our CERVID program on the USDA level, TB, chronic wasting disease, you know, the program staff, the different programs we have to make sure that our deer and elk, our cervids are moving across state lines, you know, it takes money to run that program. And for years we had that program, you know, it was funded at a higher level. It came down 2011, almost got zeroed out. We barely kept enough money in there to keep the lights on. And that's when we got really active and kind of took over more on the lobbying side and got a little more engaged in the DFA, you know, a lot harder back in. And there were some tough political years there anyway, but we come into it, we've been steadily increasing that and getting money back for indemnity. And so in the 2021 fiscal year, we ramped it up from 9 million up to 11 or to 14 million. Within that 14 million, it takes 4 million to run the program. And within that 4 million to run the program, they pull out the money we can use for indemnity, and anywhere from 1 million to 2 million. And then the leftover money goes to these cooperative agreements. As you'll hear more and more about cooperative agreement funds. This past year, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin actually used some of that money to help pay for their breeders to submit those tissue tubes, submit breeding values, and to actually do get the genetic makeup of your herds and try to incentivize people to breed away from chronic wasting disease. With that, and as everybody's aware, I mean, CWD is popping up. We popped up in 3 more states this year, you know, and that, you know, not industry related, is in the wildlife, but as we're getting more and more of it in the wildlife, we're seeing more and more of our farmers being hit with chronic wasting disease, spill over in the environment, whatever it is that, you know, coming in the hay, the scavengers, the voles, the, you know, whatever, the dirt, the dust, the mud on our tires, dumb mud on our shoes, however it is, it's getting into our pens. And we're seeing more CWD. We've had more depopulations, which I'm opposed to depopulations. I'm opposed to indemnity. I want to keep people farming, but that doesn't always work, you know, and it's easy for us to say, you know, they shouldn't depopulate that guy or that guy shouldn't take it, but, you know, feeding animals with no market's a tough thing too. Put yourself in that guy's shoes. I mean, it isn't always easy. So there are times that indemnity is needed, and that's why we make these trips. Our big push, we had basically two for this year, but the one was increasing that 14 million up to 21 million. And we're going to add 4 million, you know, move our indemnity up from that 1 to 2 million up to a solid 4 million. And then right now it's as money's left over and, you know, they can use money as needed, whatever, for indemnity. Actually changing that language a little bit to saying must be used for indemnity. So the 4 million would be strictly 100% would have sideboards on it for indemnity. And if at the end of the year, you know, the dollars weren't all spent, well, then they can use it for whatever program. But, you know, let's switch it around to where you know, we're not, you know, at the tail end, we're going to be at the leading end. So get increasing the indemnity dollars if needed, you know, and that money would be there. We're not waiting. We got herds right now that seem like you're always catching up. You know, there's a couple $1 million worth out there always waiting. And the longer they wait, the longer they incubate, the longer, the worse the problem gets. With that said, then also increasing the cooperative agreement money, because we need to get these herds, these states, I mean, apologize, I'm asking your industry leaders and our members out here, work with your state governments, your state Department of Agriculture's, to apply for these cooperative agreement funds, to get management dollars in there so that, you know, maybe the first thing isn't to go in and indemnify a herd. We should be going in there and doing the live testing, doing the genetic makeup, find out what we're working with as the sheep industry, back to the scrapie thing we talked about earlier. Let's go in here and figure out how to keep these herds farming, how to keep them out there in rural America and supporting the rural America, you know, these rural schools and hospitals. And so that's our big goal, is to move away from the indemnity, but we need funds to do that. And that's where we're increasing that cooperative agreement part of it as well, too. So there'll be funds within our state agencies to manage this disease and to manage these farms and not let people just sit out there and feed animals for years waiting on indemnity or waiting on a solution. And then with that, I think that takes me to, you know, let's jump in anytime, Josh, if I'm missing something, but the Chronic Wasting Disease Research and Management Act that we talked about earlier that passed the House, Senator Hovind from North Dakota, my senator, introduced it on our last day that we were there. It actually was introduced on the Senate side now, and it's authorizing up to $70 million. So once we get this, we still got to go chase the dollars to get that funded, which it will be funded, just about what level. And I got no doubt that's probably going to be up at that $70 million. You know?
So let me jump in because I want to walk through this kind of pragmatically so people can have an understanding of what is going on. So there's you mentioned it, Chronic Wasting Disease Management and Research Act, that you had mentioned that it was introduced over in the House side by Thompson and Kind. Yep. So Representative Thompson is out of Pennsylvania and Representative Kind is out of Wisconsin. And that's it's a bipartisan bill. When they do this, we try to have bipartisan support for getting these bills introduced. That way there's buy-in politically on both sides of the aisle. So Representative Thompson's an R and Kind's a D. So with that said, that passed the House with pretty much overwhelming support. It had yes. really, really strong support for it. That bill we've been waiting for some time now for that to be introduced into the Senate so it can get circulated around and start building support for that. And you had touched on that you're a senator and the work you've done with Senator Hovind to get that introduced. We've been kind of waiting anxiously. When's this going to happen? When's this going to happen? And on our trip last week, Thursday specifically in the afternoon, we got that done. So that's in the public sphere now. We have, again, a bill that's been passed through the House side. It's now over in the Senate. Our job is to build support for that. And this is a big, like, this is a first of its kind bill. This is, and to be clear, there's going to be a lot of fanfare about how this came about. This is the work of NDFA. NDFA started this process in 2019, and it was a smaller bill with a smaller ask, and they built a coalition with the wildlife agencies. That's going to include Rocky Mountain Elk and Boone and Crockett, and you name the list of wildlife agencies. And that coalition was built in part from Sean's work on this, and it is now a bill that has a lot of substance, a ton of support on both sides of the fence, and these funds are going to change how chronic wasting disease is researched and managed in North America. That's a fact. And I'm confident that in time, this bill is going to get put through. It's going to get appropriated. We're going to get funds from that. Now, I want to jump back to the first part of our CERVID program. And you talked about the cooperative agreements. What is a cooperative agreement?
Federal dollars supplied to the state agencies used for that particular disease. Your state agencies have been working with USDA, the federal government, for many, many years. And, you know, from Yoni's disease and cattle or whatever, there's many different programs. But that's how that state then gets assistance from the federal government to work through that problem. And it's a competitive thing. You can't just apply and automatically get money. They got to say, hey, this is what I'm going to use it for. You know, but you got an in-depth, you got to be able to justify what they're doing with it. If everybody's doing the right thing, you're not just, you know, using it for vacations, whatever. I mean, you will get approved, you know? So that is money that, the private sector, can Josh Newton apply? No. Can Pennsylvania Deer Farmer Association apply? No. But you can work with your state Department of Agriculture and do, you know, as Pennsylvania's with this issue tube thing, you know, you can apply, you can work with them. So
let me touch on that, because I think it's important. And you had mentioned that Michigan and Wisconsin also were participants. They applied for these dollars through this cooperative agreement money. And it's, you know, it's a few million bucks. So it's not insignificant. So I'll speak to Pennsylvania and what we did, because I know that there's going to be folks listening from other states that have interest in these funding initiatives.
And I can say all three states are slightly different.
Everybody's
program is slightly different.
So for those that are interested in these dollars and the importance of them, basically our Department of Agriculture submitted a proposal for a program in our state to the USDA. They reviewed that. Of course, there was letters of support that myself and Sean, and I know Dr. Seabury had submitted for those. And basically that program is to help kick off this genomic susceptibility testing in our animals and start to get herds in Pennsylvania certified, if you will, with their testing. So those dollars are available. This, jumping back to the Chronic Wasting Disease Research and Management Act, there's going to be more of these dollars coming. There's going to be more opportunity for various states across the country to come up with unique and novel ways of researching and managing chronic wasting disease. So get creative, have brainstorm sessions, talk with your Department of Ags, and make sure that they know that these funds are available and that they're applying for them, because there's more coming, right?
Right.
And we need to take advantage of this as an industry. And again, this is going to be, you touched on one, a farm gets quarantined. Instead of killing those animals, we can go through and live test. We can go through and genomically sample them. We can keep them in business. We can remove the high-risk animals. This starts to shift the narrative nationally that our herds are source herds of infection and that CWD is only in deer farms, and all this hogwash that everyone who's listening or has, you know, a little bit of common sense understands is not the case, and knows that we are a very valuable resource for fixing this problem. You're going to see this shift, right? You're going to see all these herds becoming less and less susceptible. Our number of positives will continue to go down, and everything starts to change then. So I can't stress the importance of this funding and why we need to take advantage of it. But I just wanted to touch on that because I think those cooperative agreements, they're not new to anyone in the political sphere. They're very new to our industry and our ability to be able to use them and take advantage of them through various stakeholders. So I just wanted to point that out. Let's jump.
No,
yep. Go ahead.
Back on that. And that kind of reminds me, brings up another thought here on this Management Research Act, you know, Research and Management Act, or I think is what I call it. But the research, to me, is the main component, the first component. So the money we've gotten, you know, it's these trips to DC. And I go back and I think all you have wrote about this, you know, in many different articles, whatever, but not many people read those articles, but we've gotten money for the USDA ARS, Agricultural Research Services, for Justin Greenlee there in Ames, Iowa. We've gotten money, and I think that's up to like $6.5 million now. We've gotten, you know, I think we're up to $4 million now for the Fort Collins, Colorado out there, the USDA's Wildlife Services at the National Animal Disease, or National Animal Disease Center, Ames, Iowa. National Wildlife Center is at in Fort Collins. You know, and that's the grandfather, the founding spot of CWD back in the 1967. So, but they haven't been doing research in many years because the funding dried up. So now, you know, let's get research going back in those naturally infected pens so we can have natural research instead of this injected, intracranial injected stuff. But we've driven a lot of research their way. USGS, we've, you know, gotten help support some of their research. You know, all that's government research. You know, nothing against our government, but at the same time, I think there's reasons people work for the government because they can't make it in the private sector. So anyhow, this Research and Management Act is not going to the government. You know, it's going to the private sector. It's going to our land grant universities. So I think this is going to bring researchers out of the woodwork. People that were doing this years ago that all of a sudden now can come back, prion experts that, you know, had to move on to something different because there's no funding. We're going to see a lot more eyeballs, a lot more people staring at this, a lot more minds working on it. And I think that's going to be the huge thing. And if you look at just where we've gained in the last several years with technology and with the testing and look at just the technology itself, you know, we all got computers on our hips, you know, with our cell phones, and technology is just crazy how things have increased and gotten better. You know, this SNP technology we're using, you know, heck, it's a decade old already. It's been cattle industry's been using it forever, but boy, has it been refined, and, you know, the bug's been worked out of that system. It ain't something new that we got to figure out. They've been using it. We just need to start applying it. And I think with the funding there now and the universities coming on board and the technology, the live testing, the RT-Quick, these amplification tests, whatever, things should change fast. That's where I see a really bright future, bright horizon for us, because it's going to happen. And we just need to get started. We need to follow through with it. We need to support, like you said, the state association, support your national association, so we can make sure this stuff is happening and we make sure it's continued to be funded. We can argue and fight about, should we be doing this or that with chronic wasting disease? Are we over-regulated? Yes, we are. But the true solution to the problem is taking care of the disease. You know, fix the disease. Let's do that and get rid of, you know, to where it's not a problem for us. It's not a burden for us. You know, can we do that on the wildlife side? It's not going to be as easy, but you know what? Take care of ours. If it's not a problem for us, I'm not worried about theirs. I'm betting their problem goes away, you know, if ours goes away. They're not going to want to talk about their problem anymore. But if we can help them with theirs too, great, because then it won't be spilling over in our pens. But regardless, it's an issue that needs to be taken care of. I think it's going to happen. I'm really excited about what's coming down the pipe here in the future, you know, and we're there. I mean, it's happening now, and I feel way better now than I did 6 years ago. You know, I mean, we're going to see great things coming.
Yeah, I think that's a great segue into some final thoughts about, you know, the importance of following through on these different agreements, following some of the bills and stuff going through, kind of a closing note on NDEFA and the work. Obviously, we covered a whole bunch of stuff that NDEFA has done over the past year and currently is doing. Any final thoughts that you have before we wrap up?
You know, one quick one, and maybe this is didn't even say it, but you know, I sit and I look back, you talk about the work we've been doing, and I still get the work you've been doing. I was there when you testified in front of your Pennsylvania Senate, you know, and you know, it's I know you're doing the work, you know, and I know I'm doing the work. As we talked about earlier, I'm very poor at communicating it, letting everybody else know it. One thing I refuse to do is to get in a dang war of words or in a debate with people on Facebook. I talked about it several times. I see the things that people are saying on Facebook. I read it. We're following through, trying to keep our pulse and the fingers on the pulse of the industry. But, you know, please out there in internet land here, don't expect to see me get on there and get in a tit for tat with somebody on Facebook, because that's a losing battle, a waste of time. I don't have the time to communicate, let you know what I'm doing, let alone get time to get on there and argue with someone that's never left their basement, you know? So these internet warriors. So I'm going to ask you, I mean, if you see that happening and you hear these people, these so-called experts or people that are complaining on internet, and all they're doing is complaining, they're not doing anything positive or constructive. Hey, you know, maybe correct them or ask them what they've done lately to help better this industry. You know, how many miles have they put on? You know, how many hours and days away from their family have they done? You know, I've seen Josh, like I said, get out there in the trenches and you know, he's not at home with his kids and his family, you know, his wife doing when he's out there working. So that's all I'm going to, you know, like to end on that is, you know, rest and trust that we are doing. If you don't know that, give me a call. Everybody's got my phone number, 651-212-1315. It's public. It's there. Easy to find. You know, call and ask me, you know, or if you have troubles or problems, call and tell me, you know, ask what, you know, let me know what I can do to help you. That's what I'm here for. Josh as well, your state leaders, not just Josh, but all the different state associations, reach out to your leaders and work with them. But biggest thing is support them. And you know, if you got an issue, you don't think they're doing what you should be doing, hey, bring it to me and let's find out. Let's see what we can do to make that difference. You know, if you want to be part of the solution, you want to help out too. And instead of sitting home in armchair worrying, you know, being an armchair warrior, you know, hey, give me a call. We'd love to have your help. Because you know, the negativity and this, you know, trying to put a spin on everything, that isn't fixing anything. It's not. I mean, the true fix in this is, I think, is going to be the science. So,
Josh, well, I appreciate those closing thoughts, Sean, and certainly the work that Nadifa does, and it's not obviously just you. There's some office staff and the board, you know, going through and deliberating and having meetings and, you know, setting up all the events and just everybody kind of chipping in. And you know, the overwhelming majority of folks are volunteers. So it's important just to say thank you to them. So with that,
it takes a village.
Yeah, it does. And with that, we're going to wrap up. Sean, thank you for coming on the show. And as always, stay tuned for another episode of North American Deer Talk.